elf. All he knew was that it was called Trevelyan, and it was lies. Lies. Lies.
Jules, it's Dr. Magnusson.
The woman's two voices were muffled by the reinforced steel door. He knew it was reinforced because he'd rammed it with his shoulder a few times.
Are you going to behave today?
He paused. Magnusson would not be alone or defenseless. Jules understood her not because she spoke Sangeli like Phillips, but because she wore a translation device. She tended to whisper in her own language so that the synthesized Sangeli voice was more audible. Jules decided to humor her.
Thank you, Phillips. You taught me that there was no shame in submission if it served the longer game, the wider strategy. See how fast we learn. This is how you make us an even more dangerous enemy.
I shall behave,
Jules conceded. He cocked his head and listened for the click of the lock as she deactivated it.
If you tell me why the sky's blue.
The door opened. Irina Magnusson, light-haired and wearing a gray one-piece suit, was small even by human standards. Their females were usually markedly smaller than the males, but they still took up arms and served on the front line. Jules had killed quite a few in his time, and it had never troubled him, although he was aware of the human taboo against killing women and children. Throughout their history, they seemed to have taken very little notice of that themselves, though. And both women and children were capable of killing, so they could never be ruled out as a threat. Jules decided that trying to understand human morality was a waste of time better spent on planning an escape.
Rayleigh Scattering.
Magnusson carried a pile of papers, a folio, and a data pad. She also had what looked like a small walking stick tucked under her left arm, a weapon that would give Jules a powerful electric shock if he got too near her, exactly like the one the Spartan called Naomi had used on him.
Perhaps you credit a Sangeli scientist for discovering the phenomenon, but we name it for John Rayleigh.
An armed guard followed her into the room and stood barring the door, hands clasped behind his back. Jules was beginning to filter out the human language and listen only to the Sangeli translation generated in a good approximation of Magnusson's own voice. But he forced himself to pay attention to this English. There would come a time when he'd need to understand as much of it as he could.
I meant this sky, he said. This isn't a real world. It's a hollow ball.
Magnusson laid out her papers on the Sangeli-sized desk. They seemed to have gone to some trouble to make him feel less uncomfortable.
It's a very big, hollow ball built around a star, and it has an artificial climate, so it's still caused by scattered light in the blue wavelength.
And the Forerunners made this?
Sit down, Jules.
They made stars.
He sat, but not because she'd commanded it. He still towered over her. He could reach out and snap her neck without even rising from the chair, although he knew the guard would cut him down a heartbeat later.
Are there not enough stars already? Billions upon billions. Why build another?
We're still exploring,
she said.
Maybe the star was already there. It's hard to be sure. But the sphere's main purpose was as a shelter from the flood or the halo array. It's well sealed.
And no sign of the Forerunners.
What makes you say that?
They're long gone.
Magnusson seemed more interested. Humans had these little gestures that gave everything away. She leaned forward a little, pupils dilated, and she blinked more frequently.
They're your gods.
Not mine, Jules said.
He'd lose nothing by telling her some truths. He wanted her to tell him some in return. That deal usually worked on Rhaea.
Gods don't die or forget to return. Gods choose better prophets than the Sanshium, too.
Do you believe in any gods?
No, but I'm prepared to be persuaded if one should appear.
Magnuson gave him that odd look, wrinkling her nose and pulling her brows together, something that Jules associated with human disapproval. But this was something different. Her lips curled, then her teeth glinted. Jules didn't like human smiles. They were yet another lie, an expression of happy harmlessness that was actually the baring of fangs.
"Very wise," she said. "I'd ask for proof as well."
"What do you want from me? The Covenant has been destroyed. You hold peace talks with the Arbiter. What use am I to you?"
"Ah, you're unique, Jules. Alive Sangeli, off his home territory. I don't think we've ever had one before. Who knows what we can discover about one another?"
"The last time humans sought information from me," he said, "one of your Spartan demons used electric shocks to do it."
"Yes, I'm sorry about that. Spartans aren't known for their diplomacy."
"You still require something from me, or else you would simply have killed me to silence me. It's usually information. You tell me what will happen to me if I don't comply, or offer me some incentive if I do. That's how you work, yes?"
"What intelligence would we need from you? We know where your home world is. The Arbiter's hosting human guests in his keep. You no longer have a fleet, and we've acquired Huragok. Engineers."
Magnuson sat back in her seat.
"They're living blueprints. Everything they've ever built or modified, every ship or weapon, we ask nicely and they give us every detail we need."
Jules simply sat and stared at her. It wasn't his job to beg for answers. She'd grow tired of the game and get to the point sooner or later. He used to think that he despised humans, but he'd come to realize that he was afraid of them, not because they were stronger, but because they were like bacteria, persistent and adaptable, breeding and multiplying and spreading until they overwhelmed